Welcome to the No Shame On You podcast, your go-to for eliminating stigma surrounding mental health challenges. Join us for heartwarming stories, expert tips, and a community that thrives on compassion. Let's erase shame and embrace change together.
Welcome to the No Shame On You podcast. This is Wendy Singer, Executive Director, and I'm so excited today because I have a very, very special guest. Full disclosure, we have a rich history and we've known each other since middle school. I want to introduce Bryna Siegel-Finer, Professor of English at Indiana University, where she also serves as the Director of Undergraduate Writing Programs. Bryna has been teaching at the college level since 2000, first in New York and New England, and now back home in Western Pennsylvania. Bryna lives in Pittsburgh with her husband, son, and two delicious golden retrievers. Bryna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Wendy. It's great to be here.
So Bryna and I have known each other forever. We grew up together. We met in middle school. I think at overnight camp was my first Bryna sighting at camp in sixth grade. And I think you were in my twin sister's cabin and I was in the cabin next to you. And I'm just giving a little background. And then in high school, we all went to the same public high school in Pittsburgh, Taylor Autodice, a little shout out. And we all became friends. And you and my sister have been best friends since high school. Did I miss a beat?
No, we've been best friends since high school. But, you know, I've always considered you my family, too. And, you know, I love that getting to see you and your kids and your whole family, you know, on a year, at least yearly, couple times a year basis. And it's been a long, long time, like 30 years at least.
A long time. And we recently did at No Shame On You a Feed Your Mind workshop, which is one of our monthly free virtual sessions on different mental health topics. And we did ours on treatment-resistant depression. And I remember that Bryna has struggled with this. And so I wanted to invite her on the show to talk about it from a real regular human perspective. So Bryna, first off, is there anything else you want to share about yourself? Or we can jump right into, if you could tell us a little bit about your mental health journey.
I, like you said, I've lived with depression probably since middle school. That's when I remember all of this sort of starting. You know, I remember in middle school struggling to get along with friends, arguing a lot with my parents. Looking back, I don't think that my life was any harder than any typical 13-year-old. But I don't think I had a lot of coping strategies, and I didn't cope with it well. I attempted suicide, and I did that sort of in hiding, but my parents found out and put me in therapy. So, and I was on and off therapy through middle school and high school. When I was in college, my level of sort of just general sadness and desire, you know, I had friends, I was pretty social, but by sort of junior year, I just had this overwhelming sadness and desire to really self-isolate. I wanted to be alone. I didn't want to go out with friends. I didn't enjoy anything. I remember crying a lot for no reason. And I participated in a lot of really self-destructive behavior, binge eating, alcohol, promiscuity, it was just not good. And I remember, honestly, I was at your house, at your family's house. I was with your sister and your mom, as you know, is a therapist. And I was talking to her about this. And she taught me or told me about dysthymia. It was not a word I'd ever heard before. And she really helped me understand that that there was treatment beyond just kind of talk therapy, and that I probably needed more treatment. So this was, I think, really the first time I understood that I had a diagnosis, like an actual problem, and not just that I was a angsty teenager just experiencing normal, you know, teenager stuff, like late, you know, into my, you know, 18-year-old, 19-year-old self. My parents found me a psychiatrist, and I went on Prozac, right? This was like the age of Prozac, right? And the
was this in high school or college?
This was in college. So mid 90s, you know, Prozac Nation, that's what people were put on. And I took it for many years and it did help. I was happy. I successfully finished college. I went on to grad school. But eventually, I started having really bad anxiety when I was in graduate school. It made it impossible for me to leave the house. My therapist then prescribed Klonopin, and that helped. At some point, the Prozac stopped working, and I transitioned to a different antidepressant. That worked for a few years and then stopped. And that's just kind of been the pattern of my life for 30-ish years, right? So I go through a few years with an antidepressant, then it stops working. And then I transition to something new. And that may or may not work, which means I might have a period of a few weeks where a new medicine is kicking in, or I may have a period of a few months where I try something, it doesn't work. And then I try something else and it doesn't work. And then I try something and that works. So it might be an easy, you know, couple weeks to just transition to something new, or it might be a long, hard transition trying one med after another. And I call those my dark cave periods, when I go into the dark cave. And that's when I really just sink into like a dysfunctional depression.
And you say dysfunctional, but you were functioning in some way. You were working, right? And taking care of the family.
What tends to happen during those times is that I function minimally. I kind of cancel out every part of my life that where I don't have to function. So I will go to work, and, you know, turn and put all of my energy into work because I don't really have a choice, and then turn off everything else. So then I will come home and get into bed, and my husband will take over at home. Or my parents will take over, you know, carpooling my son back and forth to school for me. And that's basically what I'm able to do. I also have gone through periods where I've been able to, because I'm a college professor, I've been able to switch my classes to online. So sometimes I'm not even really managing to get to work. I'm teaching from home, sometimes literally like in my bed. But yeah, I basically focus all of my energy on the things that are required of me, and anything that somebody else can manage, I turn off and let them manage it.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And throughout those years, when you are going into the dark cave, were you just trying medications, or were you trying other types? Were you doing talk therapy? Were you trying some alternative thing? I'm just curious what other things you might have tried.
So I think that for me, when I'm in the dark cave, I'm willing to try anything to get out of the dark cave, right? So I've tried tons of different meds, Prozac, Celexa, Vibrid, Effexor, Wellbutrin. I mean, every SSRI out there, sometimes going back to different SSRIs, like maybe it didn't work the last time, maybe it will work this time. Various different things for anxiety, you know, Seroquel, Trazodone, Ativan. I've done different wellness and mood apps. Like, there's a Finch app where you kind of have a little animal who teaches you to do good things for yourself. That could be as small as just get out of bed today, or it could be bigger, like do some exercise today. I've been consistent most of my life with talk therapy. My current therapist does traditional talk therapy, but she also does treatments like EMDR, brain spotting. She does some less traditional stuff like the EFT tapping. She also does some kind of out there things like light wands and crystals that sound really maybe a little nuts, but when you feel really bad, you'll try anything, right? Anything seems like, why not give it a shot? Who knows what it would work? And then ultimately I tried TMS.
And do you remember what TMS stands for by any chance?
It's TMS is
Trans.
transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Thank you. I should have had that, but
I
I
should have
just
had
wanted
that too.
to. I should have had that. Okay, so how did you hear about that?
So I actually heard about it from your sister.
Oh my gosh.
So she, I think, was doing some research on depression treatments for work or and she was the one who told me about it. I was in a dark cave period, and I was really struggling because my psychiatrist had very abruptly decided to retire. So I was searching for a new therapist. I was trying to get prescriptions for my meds, even though they weren't working, but just to stay on something. And she told me about it. So I started looking into that. And then once I had a new psychiatrist, I asked her about it, and she was familiar with it, and she prescribed it for me.
And tell us what a transcranial magnetic stimulation experience is like. What is it, and what is the treatment like?
Okay, so it's very, it is weird. I think that the way that it's supposed to work is that I think it kind of, it's like a, it stimulates, it's just, it's sort of like electric thought shock therapy, but it's not shocking you. You don't have to go through the same sort of process as electric shock, where they have to like sedate you and actually shock you instead. But it's the same kind of thing where they're trying to wake up different parts of your brain. So you go to the hospital where they have sort of a dentist chair set up. It has attached to it kind of a crane-like arm, like the dentist X-ray that kind of ends up in your face, but instead it hovers over your head. You sit down, they attach that to your head. The first day they do some tests that where they are sort of just triggering stimulus in your brain to see how you react to it. And what it does is it triggers your fingers. And somehow they can tell by how your fingers, like your fingers will involuntarily shake. So, and that's how they can tell where on the spot on your head they need to aim the magnets. So then after that, every day is the same. It's like a woodpecker knocking on the side of your head for 20 minutes, which
Every day.
every day, 5 days a week for six weeks, you go for 30 sessions. I think that's pretty typical. TMS is a newish treatment. It is FDA approved, but I don't think that there's any variations in how it works. So you hear it, you hear the knocking and you feel the knocking. I wouldn't say it's painful. But it is definitely weird. It is a weird sensation. Every day they turn up the intensity a little bit, but as you get used to it every day, so you don't really notice that it's getting more intense. Every now and then they would ramp it up just a little bit too much, and then like my eye and my cheek would kind of twitch, and I would have to say, you need to turn it back down because that was just too uncomfortable. And they would. They could, there's always a person in the room with you for the whole time. And they would turn it back down. So
You said uncomfortable, but does it hurt?
it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
It's just weird.
Yeah, it's a weird sensation.
So, and I wouldn't even say it's uncomfortable in a way where you're like, I mean, they do it for 20 minutes. I could have laid there for an hour and had them do it. It's not one of those uncomfortable things where you're thinking like, when is this going to be over? This needs to stop. I can't take it for much longer. But it's not relaxing by any means.
Wow. Okay. And what kind of, with a lot of medications and other things, there might be some side effects. Did you have any side effects with this?
I didn't notice any side effects.
That's really cool. Really, really cool. And how long until you started to feel better? Was it slow? Was it fast?
I did gradually feel better. By the end of the sessions, I felt back to myself. 6 weeks is about the same time as it takes for an SSRI to really kick in. So I had also started a new SSRI just before starting the TMS. So I'm not really sure which worked. Was it the SSRI? Was it the TMS? Was it the combination of both? But by the end of the 6 weeks, I felt better. I felt back to myself. I was out of the cave and everything was fine. So
How long ago was that when you first started it?
that was in January and February of 2023. So it's been about 2 years.
Oh my
Coming up
gosh.
on 2 years.
Oh my God. And it's still maintaining now?
Yeah, so you can. They say sometimes people need to go back for maintenance treatments, like maybe not 6 weeks worth, but maybe a few sessions, or maybe to do the full 6 weeks again. I haven't felt like I need to. I feel like all of my medication is very under control, and yeah, I feel great.
That's wonderful. And is this the longest period of time that you've had success with something, or have you had other periods out of the cave like this?
No, this is not the longest period of time. So, which
Okay.
is what makes treatment resistant depression tricky, right? So, I would say that, 85% of my life, I'm turning 48 in a couple weeks, that I feel happy and fine, and but it's unpredictable, right? I can feel when my meds aren't working. I can feel that that starts to happen a little gradually. But I don't usually do anything about it or believe it's really happening until I'm at rock bottom and I'm having panic attacks or I can't leave the house and I'm back in the cave. And those times are terrible and I can't predict when that's going to happen. I have had periods where medication has worked for 10 years and then stopped. And then I've had periods where something worked for 2 or 3 years and then stopped. And then I've had some that seemed to work for a couple weeks and then stopped. So I think that is sort of a tricky part of treatment-resistant depression, is that it also adds a sort of layer of anxiety, right, with that unpredictability, that things feel like they're working, but you don't necessarily trust that or always know. You just have to be kind of positive and hope that this is the one that's gonna stick.
Oh my gosh, it sounds hard. And I'm also grateful that you found something that is working for you now. And for anyone who's listening, who's struggling finding the right thing and going through what, something similar to everything, everyone's different. We know that everyone has different experiences. If there was a right fix for anything, we would do it. But what would your advice be to someone who's feeling stuck?
Sure. So, I've mentioned the dark cave a few times, and there are two reasons that I describe it like that. The first is that, depression feels like that, right? Like it feels like being in a dark place alone and not wanting to face the world. But the second reason I describe it like that is because a cave has an opening, right? And there's an exit. Even though it's dark and I don't always know where the exit is, I can't always see it, I know it exists and I have to hold on to that and know that there's the light at the end of the tunnel, that I have gotten out of the tunnel every time, or out of the cave every time. And I know there's something out there that will help me get out. I will say also that I haven't ever done it by myself. And that's really important. So like I said, this last time your sister told me about TMS, another friend found me a psychiatrist, like mine just abruptly stopped seeing clients. And that's new psychiatrist was the one to first say to me, you have treatment resistant depression. That's why for years and years, these meds have worked on and off. And yes, TMS is an appropriate treatment for this. You know, my family keeps the household together when I cannot. They do not have expectations of me to just, you know, just suck it up and do stuff, right? So it's okay if you want to stay in the cave. It's okay if you need to be in the cave, but you have to let other people into the cave and you have to let other people help you get out of the cave. There is an exit. And that's the thing to remember. Even though I have done taken a million different SSRIs and done a million different treatments, there are more treatments. There are other treatments. And I know, like, that's what I have to always hold on to, is that there's an exit from the cave. And it might take a long time, but I will eventually find it, or somebody will help me find it.
That's so inspiring. Thank you. That is great advice. Thank you, Bryna. I have one more question. For those, it sounds like you have described an incredible support system, which is great. Would you have any advice, if there's any friends or family who are listening right now who have a loved one who is struggling, do you have any advice towards them on how to hang in there for their loved one?
I do think that part of that is not waiting for your loved one to ask for help, because they're probably not going to. Like I said, the cave metaphor is probably getting old, but go into the cave, whether you're invited or not. A person who is suffering from depression, you know, I tend to, when I feel like this, I tend to have one, maybe 2 hours of what I think of as like lucidity during the day, where I can maybe get a few things done, or I can maybe get online and do some research to try to find like, what's a new med that's out there? What's a new treatment? Or I can text some friends and try to like reach out and get some information. But not everybody has that at all. So I've just noticed that as a pattern in myself. But I'm lucky that I have friends and family and support, who people who have just said, I'm finding you a psychiatrist and making you an appointment. Here's the appointment date. Show up. Here's the link. I sent it. It's on, you know, online for you to meet with her. I think people need you to just invite yourself into the cave. Can't wait for an invitation.
Thank you, Bryna.
Sure.
You're awesome. I'm so grateful. I'm so
awesome,
grateful,
Mindy,
that you decided, well, first off, that you are open to share your experience. And I think there's a lot of people who will benefit from your words.
Well, I mean, you know, your advocacy for people with mental health shows us that the more we talk about this, the less stigma there will be. And I think that's really important too. And that's why I wanted to talk about this and was willing to talk about this. I think that also helps people to understand, right? Like, if I wasn't talking about this openly, my friends and family wouldn't understand that they should just make me an appointment, take me to wherever, do whatever needs to be done. Don't ask me, or just do it, because I can't ask for it myself. And so the more people know and understand, if you're going through this, if you suffer from this, they will be able to support you better if we talk more openly about what it feels like.
So, well, let's keep
you
the conversation.
For your work to try to destigmatize mental health.
Thank you, Bryna. We got to keep talking. It's one of the easy things. It's not easy, but it's easy. So let's keep the conversation going, and all with the goal to eliminate stigma. And we'll go from there. Thank you, Bryna. Great.
Thank you.
We'll see you
Good
next time, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you for tuning into the No Shame on You podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, be sure to connect with us on all social media platforms. Explore our free resources at www.noshameonyou.org. That's the letter U, not YOU.org. Remember, every action counts in our mission to end stigma and save lives. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, take care and stay inspired.